Good afternoon, Eastern Washington and fellow Patriots. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from deep inside the heart of the future Liberty State, brought to you once again by Covenant Church Spokane. If you want to attend a church that is not compromising, Covenant Church Spokane is a church for you, especially in these times. In the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. It's not about right or left. It's about right and wrong, about our hope not being in man, but in Jesus Christ, about not ending in prayer, but moving to action, and about the difference between the gospel of salvation and the gospel of the kingdom. Jeremiah 17, 7 through 8, for the final time this year. Blessed is the man who trusts in the Lord and whose trust is the Lord, for he will be like a tree planted by the water that extends its roots by a stream and will not fear when the heat comes. But its leaves will be green, and it will not be anxious in a year of drought, nor cease to yield fruit. And then Psalm 20, verse 5. May we shout for joy over your victory, and in the name of our God, may we set up banners. They will collapse and fall, and we will rise and stand firm. Grant victory, O Yahweh, let the king answer us when we call. Well, 2020, the year that just kept on giving. And, you know, something else, too, I kind of don't even want to say anything because there's 8 hours left and 2020 could still weigh in. This was a year where evil raged and where we saw the true colors of many in elected office, that they were not really for America. They were for other countries or for, worse yet, themselves. And so, as we come to a close here in 2020, what is going to happen? Where are we going to go? What is in store for the country here in the next few weeks, let alone a few years? And I want to lay out a couple of choices that we have in front of us right now. And if you did not get a chance to hear the episode with Major General Paul Vallely and also Jack Decker, an intelligence expert, you should go back and listen to it. It is up online right now. It's up on Podbean, on iTunes, on Amazon. Check it out, listen to it, share it with your friends and family. The bottom line is, this year, 2020, was when the globalists began to execute their plan in earnest, trying to shut us down with way overblown claims of a so-called pandemic, trying to take away our identity by making us wear masks so that we become easier to control. That's one of the things that is talked about in the Middle East. And then people seem to gloss over Dr. Fauci saying, oh, masks don't work. And then a few months later saying, oh, wait, yes, they do. Which one is it? Were you lying then or lying now? And that, I think, sort of set the tone for 2020. Was Joe Biden lying then or is he lying now? Was Hillary lying then or was she lying now? Is Hunter Biden lying then or is he lying now? Is Mitt Romney lying then or is he lying now? These deceivers thought that Americans were going to give up easily. And there's people out there right now that believe that all hope is lost. And I'm going to get to that here in a few minutes. But I don't believe that that's the case. I believe Americans are now seeing things for what they really are. And when Americans see the truth, they will make the right decision. Most Americans. And the choice that we have right now is radical. And I use that term intentionally for the sake of just their motivations. But these are communists, jihadists, working for the globalists. It's now conclusively proven. It is now conclusively proven that China tried to interfere in conjunction with Venezuela in this election. It is conclusively proven now that Trump won. It is incontrovertible that their attempt to destroy this republic is coming to a head here on January 6th. And it is also incontrovertible that the Marxist forces in the United States are gearing up to become very violent. Even more, yes, even more than they are right now. That's what they're gearing up to do. That's what their intent is. I want to talk about a couple things, because on this point here, you had this lady who was charged over an attempted terrorist attack on a railroad facility in Washington State, Democratic Party organizer. And this is one of dozens of such attacks that have been attempted in the last few years. Ellen Raich, one of the people charged. Now, then you have the train derailment attempt in Bellingham. Two. Again, tied potentially. Actually, let's just tied to people that appear to be very clearly Marxist organizers and Marxist sympathizers. You have a gas line attack in Colorado, in and around Aspen, Colorado, specifically, where the police found the words "Earth First" written in black marker on the pipes in one of the sites. So you have direct ties there to Marxist and communist organization. You have the rioting in our major cities. And I need to say this just crystal clear. What more evidence do we need that the Marxists want to destroy this country? So the question becomes, what are we willing to sacrifice to save the republic? We need to be using that everywhere that we put posts up online, everywhere. Save the republic. We don't live in a democracy. We live in a republic. There was a Canadian journalist who revealed his extraordinary lack of education and his extraordinary ignorance when he tried to say, oh, that's an odd thing to say, that we don't live in a democracy. No, it's not. It's actually guaranteed in the Constitution that we have a republican form of government. It is guaranteed. We have no state constitutions that have the word democracy in it. None of the founding documents, and in fact, the founding fathers specifically called out democracy, the Greek demos kratian, as something they wanted to totally avoid, that rule of law should apply to everybody regardless of who is in power. And now we're seeing the culmination of decades-long attempt by the Marxists, particularly, to essentially set up a separate system of justice for themselves while claiming there's injustice in the existing system. They're literally creating an alternative reality to try to get you to buy into it. We, as Americans, now face a choice. January 6th, President Trump is going to present his evidence of election fraud to the Congress. A Congress, and several of them have already committed to this, are going to object to the certification of these votes. We have heard just on the radio show 2 days ago that if Trump is inaugurated, that this will become violent within 72 hours because that's what the Marxists intend to happen. But what if Trump isn't inaugurated? This is the choice we face. There will not be a free election again if Trump is not inaugurated. This is it. This is the moment we have been talking about for a decade. And many people listening to this show have been talking about for four decades or five decades. This is the moment. If a government is elected by fraud, it is no longer a legitimate government. We don't need somebody to tell us that. It's our duty as the people to figure that out. The GOP establishment has sold this country down the river. And the time of reckoning for them is coming nigh. People now understand that it's almost worse to elect these GOP traitors than it is to elect Marxists. Some people say, well, that's crazy. Well, you know, the Marxists are just being Marxists. It's the guy who's pretending to be a defender of freedom and liberty in the Constitution that is the greater threat, because they subtly allow these things to happen over time. You've heard Rich Higgins, former strategic planner on the National Security Council, lay out the case that they've been planning this for months. The Transition Integrity Project. You've heard time and again people talk about the legal process by which this could be challenged, and yet the courts won't even allow it to happen within the existing system. You have a great memorandum that was just put out by William Olson and Patrick McSweeney. And I posted that up. Of another route, last ditch legal route that's there. But here is the thing. If we have exhausted every remedy, if we have tried every avenue, if we have fought on every battlefield in the political sphere, and yet there is still tyranny and there is still fraud, what does it mean to be an American? Americans don't run to other countries. When things get hard here, we stand up and we fix it. President Trump has asked us to rally on January 6th, and that is going to happen in Washington, D.C. You're going to see millions there, by the way. Here in Spokane, we are also doing a Save the Republic rally. Stop the steal. Will you join us? There's going to be information coming out with very specific details, but it's going to be most of the day from 11 o'clock on. Are you ready to stand? Everybody at the local level that is elected seems to say, oh, their hands are tied, when it's just not true. We don't just have to sit back and allow tyranny to happen. Allow evil to manifest. This idea that we're supposed to just accept evil, that is not the gospel. The gospel of the kingdom says the kingdom of God exists to push back the darkness, to stand against it at every place, to resist constantly. Today, if we really love this country, it is up to all of us to save the republic by the grace of God. And I think, and this brings me to where my point is here, maybe God has allowed all of these options to be stripped away so that this is the time that everybody will know it was God's miracle and not anything that we did, not a Sidney Powell or even a General Flynn. It was God that did this. Because that's what we need right now to avoid civil war in this country. We need a miracle. Because 80 million patriots are not going to accept socialism or communism. Because many of those same patriots fled here from communist countries and will never see it on these shores. So this New Year's Eve, there is an opportunity to reflect on the last year and see this new year as a year of not only exposing, but a year of building. A year of justice against the forces of the deep state and the communists and the jihadists that have been operating here. And a year of justice against the globalists. But we have to open our eyes. You can no longer claim that's a conspiracy because it's all come to pass. Everything that was warned about, the fact that there would be lockdowns, the fact they would try to steal businesses and drive the middle class into the ground, the fact that they would try to force you to vaccinate. If it's so good, why do you have to force? America was built on persuasion. This is a better course. Choose this. And yet, there are still people who claim to be Christians and patriots that don't get this. The watchmen on the wall have been crying out, warning, year after year after year. We can no longer worry about the mundane things of life. We now must worry about the major things of life. And our friends and our family members and all of us have a choice to make in this hour on the eve of this new year. Will we choose in this new year to follow the Lord and righteousness? So our republic can be restored. Or will we follow a much darker path? That every single place it has occurred in the world has resulted in massive death and bloodshed. That's what the communists do. That's what socialism does. That's what Marxism does. It always ends in bloodshed. And I don't know what course others may take, but as for me and my house, we choose to serve Yahweh. We choose to serve Jesus Christ. We choose to serve Holy Spirit. And I hope that you do too. And I hope that tonight, as you ring in the new year, that it's not necessarily with a bunch of partying, as much as it is with the Lord, that we ring in the new year as Christians, taking communion together with the Lord, and that we pray in the new year, that we declare victory for our republic. We declare victory over the forces of darkness. And we thank the Lord for protection and provision for our friends and our family. That, I believe, is what it means to be a Christian patriot in this time too. And so now we're going to switch gears a little bit. And I want to talk about what you can do physically in preparation for these next 3 weeks. First of all, I think if you have not read it already, go to Readout News and read the article that I wrote about what are we willing to sacrifice. There is also another article there that talks about the Solzhenitsyn question. Alexander Solzhenitsyn in the Gulag asked the question, at what point should we have resisted? And that question is answered in that article. Network with your friends and your family and your neighbors. Have the hard conversation. Don't wait. Try to have at least 2 years of food stored up. Have the ability to grow, in other words, have seeds stored up. Have medical supplies on hand. And not, I'm not just talking like a first aid kit from Walmart. I'm talking something that could actually treat some serious injuries. These Marxists decide to start coming into the suburbs. We need to be prepared for that. Make sure you have a way to communicate and a way to listen. Single sideband radio, for example, or a ham radio. Make sure that your family is spiritually prepared, which is the most important thing. That you understand what the Bible actually says about these things. And that, and I'm going to say this right now, that this whole push of pacifism has made an apathetic church. This idea, oh, we don't have anything to worry about. Just have to last long enough and God's going to come. Instead of the gospel of the kingdom, which says we need to be pushing back darkness right now. Instead of the gospel of the kingdom that says we need to be fighting the warfare in the spiritual. And if somebody tries to attack us in the physical under those certain circumstances, that we have the right to defend the Imago Dei, the image of God. That we're unashamed about that. But we're crystal clear on where we stand. That this country is worth fighting for. That if we have the ability to defend against evil and we don't do it, we actually become complicit in that sin. The fact that not only do we have to be solidified in this, but every single member of our family and our friends need to be. Otherwise, they're actually choosing a path that takes them out of family, takes them out of friendship. And that's not harsh. That's just reality. That's the reality of where we are at right now. There are many Americans fighting right now. Many Americans fighting the information war. Many Americans fighting the psychological war. Many Americans fighting the ideological war. The question, though, always begins in our heart. The war inside of us. Have we fought that, and have we solidified where we stand in Jesus Christ? Critically important at this moment. Your physical preparedness. There's a reason for lockdowns and a reason for keeping people in their homes so that they lose their muscle mass and gain fat. So you're not in shape enough to resist. So are you keeping yourself as fit as possible? And this is as much an admonition of myself as it is anybody else. Are you getting information from sources that rely on primary source documents and not just what the news is just telling you and just take it carte blanche? Are you ready to stand? Are you ready to join us on January 6th in downtown Spokane and other parts too? We'll have more information on that as well. To stand in support of the president, to stand for saving the republic, and to stand against this attempted steal. Are you ready for this? I'm certain January 6th is going to be a day that we all remember for the rest of our lives. And the question is going to be asked, where were you on that day? Where were you on that day? This is no longer a question of evidence. I mean, my goodness gracious, from the New American, they had at this Georgia hearing, an expert confirmed he discovered how to hack Dominion voting machines. And he confirmed also that those machines were connected to the internet and engaged in two-way communication. So there is a clear proof now of this. We don't. It's not a matter of evidence anymore. It's a matter of, do we choose a republic or not? And this is not something that can wait. It's not something that we can kick the can down the road. Like I said before, there will not be another free election in this country if Trump is not inaugurated. That's their intent. We come against all that in Jesus' name. And we all need to stand together here in the physical as well against this tyranny, this clear tyranny. And that's the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that has been tuning in and going to Podbean and also sharing it across all these broad platforms, Parler, MeWe. Thank you for that to everybody that's been doing it. And also, we're on iTunes, we're on Spotify, Amazon. I've lost track of how many. But feel free to share these things and educate your family while you still have the opportunity to do so. Very important. And understand, too, that part of this battle is an information battle as much as it is anything else. As much as it is anything else. All right. Well, I want to share something, too. People have been asking, you know, where do you go for more information or to keep up with things? I'm going to be posting a lot on MeWe. And you can find me on MeWe pretty simply. It's just MeWe.com/i/MattShea. So I should be really simple to find on there. Some people have had trouble. I posted the link up on Facebook as well. On Parler, same thing. Pretty simple to find if you want to find me. But if you have an issue, you can't, just message me on Facebook and I'll get, you know, get connected with you. Then I'm going to be posting a lot of things online that you need to watch or you need to share. I shared this last week, this Ukrainian bombshell where they laid out in detail with primary source documents the corruption connected to the Biden family. I mean, they laid it out, and my wife confirmed the translation. Now, there's subtitles in there, but she confirmed the translation is accurate. So you can take a look at that. You can take a look at this new legal memo that's out there, and then also, of course, this episode with Major General Vallely, retired, and also Jack Decker, an intelligence expert, on the timing of the next 3 weeks, that there will be a challenge on January 6th. There may be a debate for as long as 12 days, and then there's going to be the consideration of actually invoking the Insurrection Act. And that was Major General Paul Vallely's analysis. So take a look at this, share it with your friends and family, and spread everything you can on these alternative social media. They're actually real social media outlets. Don't use the fake ones like Facebook. All right. It is my honor to introduce our guest today, Dr. John Diamond. He's a nationally recognized teacher, motivational, inspirational speaker, author, theologian, and Christian apologist. He's the founder and director of Peacemakers Outreach, a nonprofit faith-based organization that is dedicated to pursuing reconciliation. And that's something we really need in this time. Dr. Diamond, thanks so much for joining me on Patriot Radio today. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me tonight.
Absolutely. So, what is your take on what is happening in America right now? And I tend to be a glass half full kind of guy that, yeah, it looks a little bit rough in the near term, but things are going to end up being better. What is your analysis? What do you see out there right now?
Many of the books that I've written talk about the historical cycle of all civilizations, that we go through these cycles. And I believe that we're just basically in one of those cycles again. We're really kind of like where we were in 1775, and we're really kind of like where we were prior to the Civil War. I wrote my master's and my doctoral dissertations on this. And when you study the writings leading up to the Revolutionary War, and then you study the writings in the years leading up to the Civil War, many of the exact same issues that they were dealing with then, we are dealing with now. So I agree with you that we will get through this. I believe we probably got some rough times ahead of us, but the sooner we identify the problems and kind of learn from the past, the sooner we can get through this.
Yeah, it really seems like, let's talk a little bit about these cycles that are out there. Sir John Bagot Glubb wrote about this idea of the cycles of empires, the fourth turning. Strauss and Howe wrote about the cycles in generations of people. So if you could really quick explain how these cycles happen and kind of how they're labeled to the best that you can so that the listeners can kind of understand what we're going into and then, you know, what it looks like as we come out.
I mean, there's several of them, and I mean, this whole idea is really very well documented, not only in secular history, but in biblical history. I mean, you can kind of study the book of Judges and see that Israel went through that same exact cycle probably like 10 times. And then every nation seems to go through that same, you know, list of cycles.
So with the cycles, you know, we're kind of in the crisis collapse phase. That's what a lot of them label it, and then we're going to be coming out of it. But it seems like there is a concerted push at the global level to really, really ratchet down the control mechanisms that may, you know, that they think will survive this, and that we'll just be kind of used to. And a lot of people have called these things conspiracy theories in the past, but they're not. There is really a concerted plan and effort behind this. And so if you could, let's start with COVID-19. Let's start with the huge push for vaccinations and all the things that are happening with that. And if you could, just take a few minutes and kind of explain to the listeners and set this up, what's going on and why from your perspective?
One of the things that you know, and again, my doctorate is in, and my master's is in theology. So mostly what I approach things first from a theological perspective, and then I turn around and then see it from a historical. So I combine, in all my books, I really can combine both perspectives. And the one of the things that we have to understand about mankind is mankind has a history going clear back into the book of Exodus of wanting to enslave mankind. All right. Power corrupts. It corrupts absolutely. And unless you have some kind of moral bedrock that which you abide by, the fallen nature, the fallen man wants to enslave his fellow man. And again, you can see this straight through God's word. Even Jesus taught about this when he talked about the lords of this earth basically enslave people, and then he says it won't be so with you. You will be servants. So we always have to understand that government. We always have to be very cautious of government. Even George Washington talked about this in many of his writings about people wanting to basically overpower and enslave their fellow man. And it really is one of the bad parts of the fallen nature. And unless again there's some kind of external force that is kind of restraining that. And you know, in our government, for example, in America, that we're supposed to have civil servants. We don't have leaders. We don't have rulers. We have civil servants, and we have representatives. And for the good part of 250 years, we've kind of understood that. Well, been about the last 60 years that we've started to leave that kind of moral foundation. And as we have done that, what you have seen is the power of government, whether it's state or federal, just growing and growing and growing to the point that, you know, now our leaders believe that they are kind of our lords and our overrulers instead of our equals, instead of our servants.
And that they can just do everything for their own selfish gain, like we've seen with the Biden family and all of these allegations and primary source documents that tend to show that. So, you know, with where we're headed right now, one of the issues that's kind of come up from different people that I've talked to is this mandatory vaccination push. Many people have been warning about this for years. You know, is this really the conspiracy theory? Or is it, I mean, is this real? Is this something we all should be concerned about? And what does it mean for us as Christians?
Well, I mean, I'm doing a video right now on conspiracy theories. I'm doing a 10-part video series called The COVID-19 Crisis, where I look at a lot of this from a biblical and a historical. And one of the first ones I'm doing is on conspiracy theories. Now, what they always do is if they don't want you to believe something or they don't want you to follow it out, they call it a conspiracy theory. And we think that conspiracy theories are basically things that have no facts, no evidence, and the people that spread them should be wearing little tinfoil hats on their head. But as a former police officer, I can tell you a conspiracy is just, if you just Google it, a conspiracy is just two or more people conspiring together to commit a crime. All right, so if a couple guys go out and rob a bank, that's just armed robbery. If they can prove that they had been planning this for months, they get charged with both a bank robbery, armed robbery, and conspiracy because they have conspired to commit a crime. Now, the Bible is full of conspiracies. I mean, verifiable conspiracies. Even in the book of Esther, there was a conspiracy to kill the Jews. There was a conspiracy to kill Christ. So we have to understand that conspiracies are not some kind of far-fetched thing. And when somebody says, when I say conspiracy theory, if someone says those words to me, and well, that's just a conspiracy theory, what I always say, but is it true? Because if somebody has a theory that two or more people have conspired to commit a crime, then as a juror, so to speak, and as a Christian defining the truth, it's my job just to sit down and listen to the evidence. Is there any evidence supporting the fact that two or more people have conspired to commit a crime? So, I mean, it doesn't matter whether you're talking the COVID. It doesn't matter whether you're talking about the election fraud. You know, they want to just call it a conspiracy theory, and we have to acknowledge, yeah, it is a theory. But is it true? Let's look at the evidence. See, that's what they don't want you to do. They want to immediately label you as a nut job, call it a conspiracy theory so everybody will just not look at the evidence. But that is not the way. It even says in the Bible, it says, he who answers a matter before he hears it, it's a folly and a shame. So those of us as Christians, those of us who want to know the truth, those of us who understand the history of man wanting to enslave man, we should, especially as Christians, because we always become the targets of these things, we need to really sit back and look at what's going on and take that evidence into consideration to see if there's any validity to it.
So let's just talk directly about the conspiracy theory that people are calling it out there, that the COVID-19 vaccine actually changes the genetic makeup of a human being. Is that true? What is the implication for us as Christians?
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm not a geneticist. I mean, my background is I spent 8 years in the military, 20 years as a lineman for an electric company, and then I worked my way through all my degrees. So I'm not a geneticist, but I've studied enough of other people's writings who are and have been on and testified about this stuff that this vaccine is far different than any other vaccine that's ever been put out there. And that's one thing that you need to be very, very leery of. The other thing is you really just need to ask yourself the question is, why are they trying to force a worldwide vaccination on people that the fatality rate is no more than the flu? It's like 99.98 or something if you're under 50 years old. You know, we've got diseases out there like Ebola that are like a 40% contagion rate that'll make you bleed out of your eyeballs, but they're not trying to push a worldwide vaccination over something far more lethal. So now why all of a sudden, you know, is Bill Gates, who, by the way, isn't a politician, nobody elected him, he's not a doctor, really has no legal right to even talk on medical things. Why is it, if you don't follow the money trail, why, what other reason do you have to want to force vaccinate and an entire, basically, you know, race of people, the human race?
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, why would you have to bribe or force or intimidate people to do something like this? And I think that this kind of comes, you know, some people are saying that this might be part of some sort of a system of tracking that, you know, Christians might perceive as the mark of the beast. What are your thoughts on this? And then also on top of that, a lot of Christians think that we should just take vaccines. It's not that big a deal. What would be your message to them directly on that issue theologically?
Yeah, I mean, theologically, we are given this body and we are given these lives as a gift from God. What we do with our bodies is absolutely our choice. Now, the left has no problem with that when it comes to murdering babies. Oh, my body, my choice. Keep your laws off my body. But then when it comes to something like this, they totally change their mind. And no, the government should mandate it and should force this, you know, on anybody. So I'm not for vaccinations at all, period. I mean, I've got four kids under the age of 12, and none of which have been vaccinated for anything, because my mom was a homeopathic nurse, and she understands a lot of what goes into those things. So, I mean, you can talk about the chemicals that are in it. You can talk about the aborted stem cells that are in it. I mean, there's a whole bunch of reasons why personally, that I would never even consider doing anything like that. But again, if you understand basic vaccination theory, it's they give you a little bit of the whatever it is, so your body will build up an immune system. That is not what this is at all. I mean, this is supposed to change your RNA, supposed to change your DNA. I've got a video on my website from a CIA briefing where they said they've actually identified the gene that makes a person a religious extremist, and that they were going to use viruses and that they were going to use vaccinations to basically change that one gene so that you would no longer become a religious extremist. Well, what's an extremist? Well, it depends on your position. Christ was called an extremist. Martin Luther King was called an extremist. So anytime that they want to meddle with somebody's DNA or their genetic makeup, that is, I would absolutely tell anybody listening, do not even think of letting them do that.
So right now we're coming into this very tense period between now and actually probably through January 20th. There are a lot of Americans who are wondering, you know, as Christians, what should we be doing in this time? What, you know, is it really going to get that bad? Because, you know, things in America have always been kind of okay, you know? I mean, at least for the last 150 years anyway, it's been kind of okay. You know, it's only other countries that have the problems. It's only other countries that are suffering poverty. It's only other countries that are seeing war. Americans have been pretty insulated up until this point. But it seems like, as you said at the outset, that we're in a cycle where this is changing now. And what would be your message to Christians in this specific time that we're in about being a Christian even through crisis?
Well, I mean, one of the things that we have to ask ourselves is really how much of this is we brought on ourselves. Because if you believe in the sovereignty of God, I mean, if you look at the Civil War, I mean, very clearly, God in His Word in the Old Testament said, you do not kidnap people and you do not enslave them and you don't even own slaves. The Civil War was God's judgment upon America for allowing this to happen for 80 years. And the abolitionists were warning and warning and warning, guys, we better end this because if we don't end it, God will. Well, that's what the Civil War ended up being, is basically God's judgment on this nation for slavery. Now, you know, here I am a couple hundred years, 150 years later, but you just go in and read Abraham Lincoln's second inaugural address, which most people said looked more like a sermon than a state paper. And he basically said what I just said. He said, the judgment of God is righteous and true, and if God's going to allow this war to go on until every blood, drop of blood is paid back that was let out by the whip and every dollar that we made off of slavery has to repaid, then that's one of the offenses. He said, woe to the world because of offenses, and if slavery is one of those offenses, we're getting what we deserved. So that is why the American Civil War happened, is because morally, we just continued to just basically give God the finger and just say, we're going to keep this unlawful institution up. You can apply that same thing to abortion today. I had a meeting with my denominational president not too long ago, and I said, this is the number one thing that we need to be dealing with. And I said, I'm telling you, if we don't put an end to this, he will. And if he's got to put an end to it, it's not going to be pretty. So don't think he won't do that to America. He did it with Israel. He's done it throughout history.
Well, and I think, too, it's a very clear line that God's judgment is already on evil, and it's going to follow evil. So the more evil in a land, the more that there is going to be as far as judgment's concerned. And you're absolutely right. What is our culpability in this? Are we going to stand against this stuff and say enough is enough? And I think we have an opportunity to do that coming up. But a lot of Americans don't even know the history of this country. I mean, how would you compare the current situation state of government compared to the founding fathers and what they believed?
Well, I mean, and that's why when I wrote my book, back, let me give you the backstory. Back in 2003, I went to stand with Judge Roy Moore when they were kicking the Ten Commandments out. And when I came back, I just graduated with my bachelor's. I haven't went to my master's yet. So I studied about every founding document I could find. And one of the things that I noticed is that we were trending towards another American Revolution because people only put up with tyranny so long. They only put up with this top-down government control where these people forget that they're our equals and they're supposed to protect and defend our rights as the Constitution says and the Declaration says. And they forget that. They lose sight of that and they begin to basically pass all kinds of laws. Basically, you will do whatever we tell you to do. And it says right in Thomas Paine's writings, The Crisis, he says, when England passed a law called the Conventicles Act, and they said, we can bind you in all cases whatsoever. In other words, whatever we tell you to do, you have to do. You don't think that's where we're at again in America today, where they can tell you to shut down your businesses, where they can tell you to wear face masks, where they can tell you to social distance? They are the tyrants. They are right back to where we were. We are living in 1775. All over again. And it really is going to take that kind of faith and courage that the founding fathers had to really shake this tyranny off. And then I wrote another book called An Appeal to Heaven, which shows exactly what the founding fathers did to get rid of this tyranny. Because when your government leaders are far more powerful than you, there is only one place you can go, and that's appeal to heaven. And they put that right in the Declaration of Independence. We're appealing to the Supreme Judge of the universe for the righteousness of our intentions. We're doing right. You're the tyrant. You're the lawbreaker, and we're basically calling God in to mediate this. And that's how a nation of a bunch of farmers with pitchforks beat the world's biggest superpower, you know, up to the time America was here. We can still win this thing, and I believe we will at the end of the day, because good always triumphs over evil. But I believe we got some strenuous times ahead of us. I believe there's a lot of evil in this country that has to be rooted out, just like it was prior to the Civil War. But when it is all rooted out, then we can begin to rebuild this nation on the foundations that the founding fathers had, both the moral constitution, which is God's word, and the constitution that the founding fathers gave us.
Well, and this is where I think that the where Christians get uncomfortable, because yes, the founding fathers prayed. Yes, an appeal to heaven flag was George Washington's first flag over the cruisers. Yes, there were pastors that were advocating that the yoke of tyranny be thrown off, but ultimately it resulted in war. And I think a lot of Christians today are uncomfortable with the prospect that, yes, we may pray, but to root out the true evil that's in this country may require war. It may require people being arrested and tried to the fullest extent of the law. And so a lot of Christians are very reticent to even discuss this openly. So I want to talk with you about this openly. Theologically, why is there such reticence on the part of Christians? Why is this some sort of a scary subject when really, if God worked through the Revolutionary War to throw off tyranny, that was a good thing, and probably one of the greatest things to happen to the entire world because of Americans sending more missionaries and more money in spreading the gospel more than any other country in the entire history of the world, why all of a sudden does this become such a sticking point?
Well, I mean, just because it's a whole lot of bad theology, quite frankly. I mean, when you look back throughout the history, there are two classes of beings on this planet, theologically, the children of God and the children of the devil. You can trace this clear back to Cain and Abel and right through the revolution, or right through the book of Revelation. The children of the devil always seek to kill the children of God. Jesus told the religious leaders, you're of your father, the devil. All of your fathers killed every one of the prophets we sold or we sent. They killed Stephen. And right through history, the children of the devil always, even the parable of the wheat and the tares, it says that, you know, the tares are the children of the wicked one, the children of the devil. So the first thing a Christian has to understand is we're not all God's children. The Bible doesn't say that. There's a very clear distinction from Cain and Abel all the way through Revelation that there are two groups, all right? And the one group always seeks to kill the other group. You can prove that straight through the Bible. But to think that we have to stand by and take that God is on the side of the tyrant. God was not on the side of Pharaoh, right? And Moses wasn't standing over the Red Sea going, oh God, forgive them and bless them. No, they conspired to kill the children of Israel, and God destroyed Egypt. When Esther and Mordecai found about the conspiracy to kill the Jews, You know, they didn't say, "Oh Lord, forgive Haman and bless him." They went to the king. They appealed to the king and said, "That wicked guy right there is committing conspiracy. He's got a conspiracy to commit murder against God's people." And Haman ended up getting hung. So, I mean, this whole idea that somehow God is on the side of the tyrant and God is on the side of the lawbreaker and the criminal, that is just so theologically incorrect, it's not even funny. Until we reach that conclusion, then we can understand justice, right? I mean, it's not unchristian to call the cops if a man is raping a woman. The woman is innocent. The man is the lawbreaker. It is okay to call and ask for justice in that case. You're not being a bad person. So when you go and you look at the parable of the persistent widow, which is what my Appeal to Heaven book is about, what did Jesus say to pray? Get justice for me from my adversaries. And he says, won't I avenge you? If you cry out to me day and night, will I not come down there and avenge you? And then he finishes by saying, but when I come back, will I really find faith on the earth? And I mean, that's a very, very telling question right there, that if you truly understand Romans 13, that God, government, citizens, that's what it says, let every soul, who's every soul? Every soul, president, Congress, Supreme Court, let every soul be subject to the higher authority, for there is no authority but of God. God is the highest authority in the chain of command. Government is under his authority. We are under government's authority. But what happens when government rebels against God? God is not on their side. He was not on Pharaoh's side. He was not on Nebuchadnezzar's side. He was not on Darius's side. He was not on the Pharisee's side. God is always on the side of the person, the people that understand that he is king, lawgiver, and judge, and they say that I'm going to stand here regardless of what these corrupt government officials say and do.
That is extremely well said. And so we only have a couple of minutes left. I got into a discussion recently on imprecatory prayer. How could you say that a Christian can declare the justice of God on another person? And I said, they're already under judgment. They're already under a curse. Evil already is. You're just proclaiming what God has already proclaimed in the heavenlies and asking for it to be done on the earth. And it was this profound moment, I guess. But we it's like we're hemming and hawing as Christians about fighting. How should we pray? We should come against all of those authorities and powers and principalities in the spiritual. Absolutely. And ask for his justice in the physical.
Without a doubt. And that's what my book, Appeal to Heaven, A Cry for Divine Justice, is about. It's about imprecatory prayer. And I've been speaking on this a lot lately and wrote some articles on it. And some people are like, oh, you know, when you got, you know, the imprecatory prayers, there's like 25 of them in imprecatory psalms, you know, break the jaw of the wicked, break the arm of the wicked. I told my church, I said, how many times have you ever prayed that? And it almost sounds, if you don't understand law and justice, it almost sounds like something that we shouldn't do. But what it comes down to is this, and this was the one problem God had with Job. It was the reason for his whole trial. He said, can a man be more righteous than God and more moral than his maker? If God gave us 25 imprecatory psalms to pray when wicked and unjust men begin to attack innocent widows and children and families, he gave us those prayers to pray in these times. And when you're basically rebuking Christ like Peter rebuked Christ when he said, oh no, you'll never go to the cross. If God says to do something, we need to put our little moral standards aside and say, to seek to understand, God, why would you even give us orders and give us imprecatory psalms to pray? Read all the imprecatory psalms. It's always wicked people seeking to attack and kill the innocent. And then when these people are more powerful, then you can go above their head and pray to God that we don't take vengeance ourselves other than self-defense, but we can call in God. And that's what we need in this country right now. Because, I mean, the corporate elites, the Facebooks, the Walmarts, these people control our government. They control our society. They control absolutely everything. We do not have the power, the money, or anything to come against them, but we do know who does. And if we call him in and use imprecatory prayer and ask him to come in and judge between us and them, he promises he'll do that.
He promises it, and we can stand on that promise. Dr. John Diamond, if you could, last 30 seconds, where can people go find your book and find out more about you?
Both of the books are available on Amazon. The first one's called Fighting the Next American Revolution by Dr. John Diamond, and the second one's called An Appeal to Heaven, A Cry for Divine Justice. So the first book I wrote 15 years ago explains what is happening. The second book, An Appeal to Heaven, gives us the solution. This is what God says to do when we as Christians and American Christians are put in the situation that we are in. Okay, the children of Israel used it. The founding fathers used it. Martin Luther King used it. The slave used it. The appeal to heaven prayer works every time if we just get our priorities straight.
Amen. Happy New Year, Dr. Diamond. Thank you so much for joining me on Patriot Radio today. Keep up the fight.
Thank you, my brother. It's been a pleasure.
All right, Dr. John Diamond, we're going to have him on again here after the new year. Dr. John Diamond, Executive Director for Peacemakers Outreach. He's the author of Appeal to Heaven, A Cry for Divine Judgment, and Fighting the Next American Revolution. Fantastic theological underpinnings for the time that we're in right now. This is a time to fight in the spiritual, and it may come to fighting in the physical. Defending against wickedness. Defending against those who would seek to destroy Christendom. They would seek to subjugate other peoples. And I love the fact that this is a very cut and dried issue. Evil is already under the curse. It is already under judgment. We are supposed to be coming against it all the time, everywhere we see it. We're not just supposed to sit back and accept evil. A while back, I heard a story about how a pastor said if people broke into his house that he would let them rape his wife. And the question then becomes, does your wife know that? Because we have something inside us that says we need to stand and fight for what's right. We need to stand against wickedness. And that's exactly what this generation is going to do. This is Matt Shea signing off for 2020. God bless you all.